When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the weekly show where myself, my name's Dan, and another gentleman, also named Dan, talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books. Thank you for Prince Diana Wave, Daniel. And of course, Game of Thrones House the Dragon, which is currently in the middle of its second season. Hooray! Hello, Martha, fantasy fan, Natalie Zamora, Ertak, always good to see you, Julie Davies. We are also doing, if you're not aware, I'll start with a plug, as all self-respecting podcasters currently streaming live after every single new episode of House of the Dragon. So directly after, we talk through the whole episode right at 9 p.m. if you happen to live in the central times in the U.S. and elsewhere, whatever, after the episode. So these Wednesday shows, we're still doing them, but we're not going to focus as much on House of the Dragon because we're really covering that on Sundays. Here we're going to talk about a bit House of the Dragon. Sure, why not? We love it. We got some good responses in the chat from you guys. Loved episode 2, says Fantasy Fan. I did too. Quite solid. Ertak says, all hail King Aegon 2. Completely agree with that. Aegon 2 is stealing the show for me. What a delightful little rat bastard. But we are going to do some other things today. If you want to join in for the full House of the Dragon discussion, I suggest you go to the YouTuber or Facebook page after each episode and talk to us there. But first, let's engage in a short spot of preambulatory banter. Daniel, how are you?
Wow, that was I feel enlivened, actually, by that opening banter. I feel ready to talk about stuff now. And I wasn't just a moment ago, so I'm good. How are you, Dan? How's everyone in the chat?
We have a good place to start, because Robert Harris points out that you actually were not able to get on the Sunday night show, because I think a tornado tore the roof of your house. So why don't we start with that? Yeah. Something with weather. I'm sorry you couldn't join us. What did you think of the new House of the Dragon episode, the wonderfully named Rhaenyra the Cruel?
Yeah, so you are right. A tornado did not sweep through my home, but we were on tornado watch and the internet kept going in and out. So, alas, I missed the fun hijinks. I was very sad I wasn't here. But I loved Rhaenyra the Cruel. I thought that was a banger of an episode of House of the Dragon. And unlike Blood and Cheese, which I had some issues with, I had some misgivings. I didn't really have misgivings that I can really think of very much for the second episode. I thought it was paced well. I really enjoyed how much time they spent on the fallout of Blood and Cheese. I think they did the fallout of Blood and Cheese much better than they did Blood and Cheese itself.
I agree.
I loved what they did with Kristen Cole, which, like, I don't really like Kristen Cole, but I was more interested in him in this episode than any in a very long time. And I think he's got a pretty interesting arc he's going on this season. Aegon, like you said, like everyone has said, Aegon continues to be amazing. The surprise character I enjoyed a lot in the episode for me was Otto Hightower. I thought it was a huge episode for Rissa Fons, and sorry to him if I'm saying your name wrong, but
no
I think he
Welsh.
really No one. I certainly can't. But I think he really, really nailed a few important moments for Otto, being stripped of Hand of the King again after, you know, King Viserys stripped him of being Hand of the King once back in the day. And yeah, I thought that whole scene, I felt for Otto in that scene. And then he kind of threw it away in the end, you know, when in that Hightower cycle of repression, where he lovingly tells Allison, I don't really want to hear about your sins. And then she goes, yeah, yeah, I love you so much, but please don't talk to me right now about the things you're sad about. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. I loved the Cargill fight. I was certain, so certain, that I wrote like a whole breakdown of this fight.
Yes, you did.
The Eric Cargill, the one serving Aegon. So Eric with an A was the one who fell on his sword. I was so certain. I subjected my poor partner to like a half an hour of rambling about it. I became the Charlie meme from Always Sunny for a solid part of this Sunday night, explaining the different cuts on the different Cargill brothers' legs and the different camera angles and all that stuff. And then the actor for Eric with an E was like, yeah, no, that was me. So I like that. I think they did that on purpose. They purposely made it confusing to put you in Rhaenyra's shoes so that in that final moment, you're not sure which one it is until he says your grace. And then it's tragic and sad. Yeah, like Bushmaster said, I also really love the difference between how the children are being nurtured on the Blacks side versus neglected on the Greens. So I loved Rhaenyra the Cruel. I think it's a little interesting that they were so cagey about the episode title, because I don't know how much anyone in the chat was really paying attention to this, but we didn't get a title for the episode until like well after it was out, which is a little unusual. Like, it aired without a title. And then afterward, they were like, by the way, it's Rhaenyra the Cruel, in case you were wondering. I thought that was a little intriguing, just like on the production side of things. But yeah, I loved it. I could ramble about it forever because it was just a great hour of, or 72 minutes, I should say, of television.
Very precise.
I miss anything, Dan? Was there anything you particularly loved you wanted to touch on?
I'm more or less in agreement with you. I liked it a lot. The only thing I didn't like was I wish they had kept in the stuff from Fire and Blood, not pictured, where Eric and Arik, or whoever you say their names, got some
nice
build-up.
That was good. I could tell the difference there.
Thank you. If you were on there on Sunday, I worked through this and was embarrassed on camera about it. Because in Fire and Blood, there's this scene where they both meet up after the coup, but before they fight each other, where they try to convince each other to kind of switch sides, and neither of them budge, and they part on sad, melancholic terms, knowing the next time they meet, it's going to be his enemies. I feel like that really would have gone, it could have like taken that scene from like good, because it was good. Like, everything in the episode was very, at least good, and sometimes very good. They could have taken it from like solid to great. That's really my only complaint. Even my Serio was kind of tolerable. I also think
this was a great episode for my Serio, I thought.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm really enjoying Sonoya Mizuno's performance as Mysaria this season. And like knowing that Mysaria, so like spoiler here for Fire and Blood, but she kind of assumes a Varys type role, and her and Rhaenyra have a very interesting relationship. I'm really enjoying, you know, the work that they're doing with her this season. I missed that scene too that you were talking about with Eric and Arik. I didn't mind it so much, probably because I watched the Green Council episode like right before this one. So their parting was very fresh in my mind from the show, because that's the last time they're together in the show before this. And it does still work. They do still have a back and forth there where Eric is like, King Aegon's kind of awful. Don't you see how awful he is? Like, reminder, Aegon has a bastard who lives in the fighting pits of King's Landing in the show. That's going to be relevant at some point.
Sure.
But yeah, they cut out that, if I remember right, that Eric and Arik scene you're talking about is in the middle of like a treating moment. Like Aegon sends an envoy to Rhaenyra.
It's basically when Otto comes in the Black Queen to talk to Rhaenyra on the bridge. That's when it would have happened.
Yeah, they do it differently in the book, where it's like, I think it's Grandmaester Orwell goes, mm-hmm. and then Rhaenyra like strips him of his office and is like, get out, tell my brother I'll have, you know, my throne or his head, basically. And Eric and Arik have that conversation. So, I could see what you mean. That would have made it better, but I think it was already great. So that's one of those things where it's like, the nitpick is definitely there to be made, but like, it's so hard to hold that against such an excellent hour of television for me.
Well, I can do it, because I do think the show struggles with kind of overall vision sometimes, but it was good. It was a very good episode. I liked it a lot. Some great comments, as usual. I did that was funny, Bushmaster, that I'm always looking for moments where Rhaenyra is showing a little bit of I don't know, like something being a little less than saintly. Because I'm afraid they're going to like deify her. And yeah, I did like that she was like to Jace. Jace is like, I'll go on my dragon and watch King's Landing. She's like, no, we can't risk you. And then later it's like, hey, Bela, I need you to go on your dragon and watch King's Landing. Just because she's willing to sacrifice Bela, but not Jace. That was nice. I did enjoy that. And
yeah,
someone asked,
I didn't mind that so much.
No, it was great. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I saw people, you know, complaining about that on the internet, but I think that choice makes total sense. Jace is her heir. She's just lost her son. You know, Rhaenyra is not going to coddle Bela either, because she's a woman or, you know, for any reason, really. Like, she's a dragon rider. And to Rhaenyra, that means she is a capable person who should be filling a place in this war. So,
Rhaenyra looks less than saintly. I think that's great.
Yeah. We need to see. It's funny because this episode was Rhaenyra the Cruel. And obviously that was, you know, referencing the propaganda that she is Rhaenyra the Cruel. But we're going to need to see her actually become Rhaenyra the Cruel at some point in this show, I hope. Because,
Sure.
And I'm a little worried, too, that they're going to be like, she's misunderstood by history. And I can understand the angle of that, but she also needs to make some real questionable choices to get to where she needs to go in the book.
We don't know how far they're going to take it. My worry is it's going to feel patronizing. Like, at some point, it's going to start feeling like they're really dancing around having her do anything suspect. And it's going to start feeling patronizing and kind of didactic, because, you know, women are capable of making bad decisions too, and a little contrived, but we haven't gotten there yet. So we'll see what happens as we go on. Some other great comments. Natalie, for Rhaenyra Cruel. Me too. I would love it. Bushmaster, a great question. Is the brothel madam that Aemon was sleeping with Gaiman's mother? Well, I guess possibly. Ooh, that would be a fun way to work her in when they get later to Gaiman Palehair, but that's in the future. We'll see that. And there's one other thing I wanted to address.
Well, Gaiman...
Somebody...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Gaiman Palehair, that's, you know, that's the bastard we saw in the fighting pit in the Green Council coup. I could see them making her the mother of Gaiman Palehair. I don't know how I'll feel about that, but that strikes me as one of those television adaptation choices where it's like, like you said, Dan, that's a somewhat easy way to continue working in an actor they already have and they already like. but you were going to grab another question, I think, before I rudely cut you off.
I'm loving the comments. Just all of you are pretty funny. Do you think we'll see the Terminator of the Dragon Pit S Arya? We better, eventually. Someone next asked season. Down the chat.
Yeah.
Probably next season. Whether Kristen would get punished for sending the twin to go kill Rhaenyra. And you're like, normally, but not when the idiot king loves the idea and the buck stops with him. So in that case, probably not, because the guy in charge is on a similar level when it comes to planning. So probably not. He gets rewarded. There's some great memes going around of, like, you know, like a book called like Failing Upwards, the picture of Kristen Cole on it, which is fun.
Yeah, I think the way you meant to phrase that question, Claudia, was shouldn't Kristen get in trouble for sending Eric to slay the pretender to the throne? Because that's the way Aegon's going to look at it. And obviously he's going to think that's great. Brilliant, really. He'll pretend to be his own twin. Brilliant.
Again, it almost worked. So I don't know. We can't even say it was the absolute worst plan in the world. It was so close.
I did like that. I did like that it was like, oh, this was really close. Because in the way it's presented in the book, like, you know, there are all these, like, legends of Eric and Arik. Like, I don't know if it's up yet, Dan. I think it is. You wrote a thing looking at all the different times they had been mentioned in A Song of Ice and Fire.
It's up.
Because Eric and it is up. So this is up on winterscoming.net right now. It's a really interesting article that Dan wrote. So
good.
Eric and Arik, it is so good. Eric and Arik Cargill were mentioned in like Bran's second chapter of A Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. Like they go way, way back in George R. R. Martin's mythos of Westeros and his books. And Sansa talks about them too in A Clash of Kings, and how she's saying this to like Tommen, because Tommen's crying in one scene and Joffrey's bullying him. And she's like, it's okay for men to cry. Like Eric and Arik Cargill, the twin Kingsguard knights, died on each other's swords with tears on their cheeks, basically. So I liked how there are all these things. The way it's presented in Fire and Blood is like they run into each other in a hallway and very formally are like, we shall now duel because we knew this day would come. And, you know, George R. R. Martin is very careful to be like, that's the way one history recounts it. Another is that it was much more brutal and they were cursing each other as they were fighting. Another is that said they loved each other so much. I like that the show did this very, you know, very gritty version of it, where it's like, Eric actually gets all the way to Rhaenyra's bedchamber before Eric stops her. I thought that was a great decision. And I think finally some of the like filling in between the lines of the history, that's in air quotes for the audio listeners, filling in those lines. I think the show is finally hitting its stride with that. Like Cheese was another one I really liked. So Cheese got hanged in this episode. We don't ever find out what happened to Cheese in the book. It's just like Aegon hung all the rat catchers, and you can just assume Cheese escaped or not escaped, because it's just really never clarified. And I like that the show still leaves it that way. Like Aegon doesn't really know, but he's just assuming he hanged them all. He probably got the guy. And we as the audience know he got Cheese. And I think that was a really cool way to do it.
I agree. All right. We could keep talking about this. So far, we're really failing in our attempt to not talk about less episodes of the Dragon on the Wednesday shows, which
it was just that good.
It was quite good. Good questions, all you guys. I can say that Rook's Rest is absolutely episode 4, whoever asked that. As for like seems a still like of a riot being cut out, we're not sure about that, but we're going to be analyzing it soon in written word form.
Yeah.
But let's talk about episode 3, because we've both seen the third episode. We saw it last night. We get screeners. We're lucky, envious. Do you have any spoiler-free thoughts, Daniel, about what you think about episode 3? Because we are allowed. People talk about it already.
Yeah, we're allowed to give like very broad, large picture like impressions. I enjoyed the third episode a lot. You have two. Okay. I think the show remains very, very strong in this season. I think it's really hitting its stride, honestly, because the first season, like, it's a beautiful season of television, but it was so unique in the way it was structured and the very heavy amount of legwork it needed to do to introduce this cast of characters. I feel like the show is really hitting its stride, and I enjoyed the third episode quite a lot. I think people will enjoy it, and there will be a couple of things that really ignite the internet and the fandoms, you know, better and worse tendencies, maybe we'll say. What about you, Dan?
I had two thoughts on it. We got some questions, like, who was the standout episode three, asked Dre. I thought Agan was standout for the first two episodes. I don't know if there really was a standout for me in episode three. It's a bit more ensemble-y.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that answer. That's a good question. Oh, no, the standout is full frontal male nudity. My two thoughts are...
It is. He's not even joking.
The third... No, I'm not. You'll see what I mean. This was the first episode in a while. This felt like an old-timey Game of Thrones episode to me, more than any of the others.
Yeah.
The first season felt very unique because we were all skipping around in time. These first two episodes were kind of like these slow kind of build-ups to these big things at the end. This episode did remind, like, the action starts to pick up a little more. People are kind of on the move. There were, like, kind of forces being mobilized. I did get, like, oh, this feels like we're watching Game of Thrones again.
Yeah.
The other thought I had, which is less complimentary, was that there was a bit of a sense of maybe marking time a bit in the third episode. I was complaining earlier about, I hope they don't make Rhaenyra too nice. And the third episode sort of started to stretch it a bit for me, where it's like, at some point, I just hope they don't make this show too didactic, where it's like, we all understand that war is bad. I think that's kind of axiomatic. I guess I also want some of, like, the thrill of war. Like, why do people throw themselves into war? They're getting something out of it. So let's feel that and then be complicit when we see the devastation. The kind of back and forth about, we shan't, we can't, we mustn't. At some point, we'll get a little old, although I know Rooks is coming in this episode four, so I know it's probably going to be dashed to pieces. Overall, it's good. It does feel like old Game of Thrones because the action's starting to pick up, and that's probably all we should probably say before HBO detonates the bombs under our cars.
Yeah, totally. I agree with most everything you said. I think that Rooks, like you said, Rooks Rest is coming, and there is a little bit of a feeling of that's going to be a game changer for a lot of characters, which it's kind of funny. Like, I didn't really feel that way, even though it is the case in Fire and Blood. In Fire and Blood, you know, characters like Rhaenyra are already kind of making their transitions into being more morally ambiguous before Rook's Rest. And it feels like in the show, they are going to pin a lot on Rook's Rest in terms of, you know, similar to, which we don't necessarily need to talk about too much, but maybe a little bit, the most recent episode of The Acolyte, the Star Wars show, which I don't know if you've seen, Dan, but the...
I did.
The latest one. Okay. Well, it's a big bloody reset where, whether you liked it or not, it's very obvious things are going to be different after that. And I think Rook's Rest be that for this season of House of the Dragon as well.
It's, I mean, because the book and the show are so different. Like, it's one thing to just, you know, write, and then they fought, and this dragon died or whatever.
Yes.
But in the show, these are the characters we're spending time with. So to see them actually, like, the characters they built up clash will feel different. I'm looking forward to that. And I enjoyed episode three, too.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the action happening. I enjoyed the dialogue, and I enjoyed the full frontal male nudity. So look forward to that. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
And by the way,
that's...
Mm-hmm.
Folks, I was just going to say, and that's all we should say. What were you going to say? Something about folks, small folks, any folks.
They're talking about Christian Cole. I will say, I agree. I am liking him more this season. I understand him more than the season. He's being sent out on more, like, tasks, and seeing him in different contexts is kind of helping me not loathe him. I do agree with Julie Davies, though, that I know the actor is getting some hate, Fabian Frankel, which is always ridiculous, like, whenever that happens.
Yeah, not cool.
Should be very silly, but I mean, I'm not sure there's any way out of that at this point. It's happened so many times. We all know it's coming. Whenever there's a character who isn't like, people will invariably go for the actor. But I think that's all we should say.
Yeah, it's a shame, too. It's kind of ironic. So, one, obviously, hating on actors, not cool. Deranged behavior. But we've done so much complaining, and so many people have done so much complaining about, like, softening difficult moments. Like, just let your villains be awful. Let your characters make villainous decisions, House of the Dragon. And it's like, Kristen Cole is one of the few characters that the show really got the memo with, because I think Kristen is, he's way more loathsome in the show than he is in the book. Like, he's not great in the book, but they really make you hate him in the show in a different way, because he's just making awful decision after awful decision. And, you know, got spurned by an ex like 20 years ago and is still being a jerk about it. Except now he's in a position of power. And what does that look like? I think Kristen, he's being set up for a very interesting journey this season, because, you know, Kristen was just made Hand of the King. And I love that, like, that was not an ambition of Kristen's. He's just like, Bushmaster's talking about Interview with the Vampire. I got confused. I'm not Daniel Malloy. But yeah, I think Kristen is being set up for a very interesting arc, and I can't wait to see where he goes for the rest of the season, which I would not have thought to say before this.
All right, we've done a terrible job of not discussing House of the Dragon.
Even we've still got half a show left.
Are saying to move on, which I'm happy to do. Bushmaster, you don't need to prod me to talk about Interview with the Vampire. So, other than House of the Dragon, there are other shows going on, such as, like, and such things as The Boys on Amazon Prime Video.
Yes.
We're just having a good season. I'm enjoying The Boys, this superhero program, where the superheroes are all dicks and sociopaths and fascists and psychos and a little bit naughty. And it's got some mixed reviews. It's got, I think it kind of got the review bomb treatment from, I don't know, I guess a lot of conservative folk who figured out that it was criticizing them. But it's on the upswing. It's all, The Boys has always been a rock solid show. It's always been dependable.
Yes.
Maybe a little, my complaint with The Boys is that it can get a little repetitive. I feel like it has like this old timey TV mindset where things tend to like go back to zero a bunch, at least at the end of every season, if not at the end of every episode, and kind of, but it like looks like one of your modern House of the Dragon, Game of Thrones-y, it's more like one long movie than it is a TV show, kind of TV shows, but it still feels like a TV show. I like it. It's fun. I'm having a good time. The last episode was a lot of fun, where Homelander goes home and brutally murders all the people who raised him in the science lab. That's the kind of gleeful craziness The Boys fans, I think, come to expect. It is, as always, fully embracing its very clear parallels to our modern political moment, which it's kind of one of the only shows that really does that. The central metaphor of these superheroes being like our celebrities and our politicians, which are often the same, more and more the same thing, if you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It really goes for that, and I like how unapologetic it is. And I'm always entertained watching The Boys, if maybe not brought to the edge of bliss or despair the way a show like House of the Dragon sometimes can.
Yeah. Yeah, I I'm in agreement with you here, Dan. I have been really enjoying this season of The Boys. And it is a show that is so, like you said, dependable, almost to a fault for me as the viewer. Like, I tend to like forget about The Boys when it's not on and not really find myself like jonesing to watch more episodes of it.
But
I think this season I'm enjoying way more than last season for some reason. Like, I couldn't tell you why, but there's something about the dynamics that this season that is really, really working for me. I'm enjoying that, you know, we have new villains on the field. I think Sister Sage is one of the best villains the show has had in a while. Yeah, that, you know, frontal brain lobotomy was, that was a thing that happened because the boys loves its things that happens. But I like that she's been like outwitting people pretty constantly because she's just that smart. And they've introduced this element of that comes with its own, you know, burdens as well. Firecracker obviously hits pretty, you know, pretty well with some of our current political trends and moments and stuff like that.
Dude.
So, yeah.
I've watched the screeners for a couple episodes more. There is a firecracker moment coming up toward the end of episode 6, I think, that had me laugh out loud. So I'm looking forward to seeing people think about that when it happens.
But oh, cool.
Won't say anything more.
Yeah, yeah. I think the voice has been hilarious and really, really strong this season. The review bombing, because people are finally realizing it is making fun of them. I'm sorry if you're one of those people, but also not sorry because that's what the show's always been about. So I'm glad you're finally realizing it, I guess. And I did like the Homelander goes home type of plot line.
I think that's good.
Anthony Starr, his acting, whoever said incredible acting from him, I think this was one of his best episodes of the entire series. And cool behind the scenes thing that I did not know that I read this week. He was actually responsible for a lot of kind of the tone, the tenor of that sequence. So I guess originally when it was written, when it was sent to him, it was just Homelander goes to this lab and he's just awful and tortures and murders everyone. And Anthony Starr basically got back to him and was like, look, that doesn't feel quite right to me. I think he would get there and like kind of vacillate between that, you know, being terrible and killing people, and also like being confused and vulnerable and like, hey, I'm reminiscing. I'm back in my home that I haven't been in so long. So he kind of really introduced that back and forth element for that scene. And Eric Kripke, who's the showrunner, the writer, basically was like, you know, he was absolutely right. He was so on point with that. And I think you see that come across in the finished episode. So The Boys is on fire right now. Great, great season of television.
Not a good mania. Also, we're also to talk about another great show that I'm watching. I think this next show is the best show on TV. I've been very impressed with this. Right now, I'm standing by it. If you are not watching Interview with the Vampire,
better than House of.
Yes, I am. If you are not watching Interview with the Vampire on AMC, which I realize it's kind of hard to watch because no one has TV anymore, and it's not on.
Yeah,
it's on AMC Plus. Don't you want to add AMC Plus to your network of streaming services like Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, Max, Paramount Plus, etc. and so forth? I get it. But if you can, the first season is coming to Netflix soon. Interview with the Vampire is such a good show. It's an adaptation of Anne Rice's book of the same name. I never read it, but I saw the movie with Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise, which is pretty good. Kind of a cult classic. It's a Grey Worm. Jacob Anderson from Game of Thrones plays Louis, a Cajun vampire turned by a French Lothario hedonist vampire named Lestat, played by Sam Reed. The performances are just scrumptious. It has such a great. Anne Rice's books are famous for conceiving of vampires as these melancholy, eternal walkers of the night who are doomed to spend eternity like contemplating their own tragic contradictions. It's a very sort of erotically charged, sad way of life. And the book embraces that and sells it in a way that is very impressive, given how easily I think that kind of thing could seem cheesy, could seem stupid, or could just be underwritten or underthought to the point where it just comes across as too broad or not interesting. The showrunner here, Roland Jones, I don't know a lot about him, but I know I love him. I know he's a genius, and I know he's really put a lot of work into making sure, like, all the little emotional nuances are there between every character, every time. There are so many layers to this show, because you have the past, where Jacob Anderson, Grey Worm, Louis the Vampire, is narrating his story, to this kind of wizened older journalist, Daniel Malloy. He shares your name. Not the last one, though. And
your name.
I'm not Daniel. How dare you? And their scenes together are great, because Louis kind of like lies or forgets some things sometimes, and Daniel has to like root it out of him. He's such a great foil. And then they get into his past, and that was thrilling. This last episode was crazy. It was the death of a major character. And just these gay vampires being as melodramatic as possible, but still it feels weighty and important and like it smacks you. This show is so good. This show is so good. I can't recommend it highly enough, and I hope more folk watch it. I've seen the finale coming this Sunday in a screener, and that blew my head off. And now they renewed it for season 3, and I'm very, very happy. And I'm probably going to read an Anne Rice book at this point. I think that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get the Vampire to stop and give it a try.
You're going to skip Interview with the Vampire?
I've seen the movie. I've seen the show. Come on, man. I want to get to the next bit.
That's fair. And so I have read a couple of Anne Rice books, including Interview with the Vampire, and they do feel a little different after that one. It's kind of like, because Interview is Louis's story, and none of the rest of them really are really about Louis. They're all about Lestat. Or Armand or whoever else, because she wrote a lot of books. I am so intrigued, because I have not watched Interview with the Vampire, but I respect your opinion, Dan, and you've been raving about this show. A lot of other people whose opinions I respect have been raving about this show. I've seen a few clips from it. I did see one clip from the trial that happens in this most recent episode, which, if you've seen the 90s movie, you've read the book, you know what that's about. I'm not going to go spoiling it for people who haven't. I saw another clip earlier of Louis and Armand arguing. So they've changed some things, because it seems like the show is beyond exploring what it means to have Louis as a Black person in the time periods that he is living
it's
in,
really,
which is not an element.
In a non-cringy, effective way.
Yeah. It had to. If it was going to make Louis a Black person, it had to embrace it, in my opinion, because it's a period piece. So I think it seems like they've done some really interesting things with that, and, you know, leaning into a lot of the subtext of Anne Rice's stories, because, you know, these books came out quite a while ago. They weren't as explicitly gay, but it was pretty like widely understood that that was what she was saying with a lot of these characters. The acting just seems like everyone working on this show. I saw a quote from Roland Jones, the showrunner, where he basically said, like, this is his most important piece of art he's made, something to that effect. And you can feel that love come across even in the handful of like minute long clips that I've seen. It's like the actors have all brought their A games. The way that they're constructing this story seems super intelligent and interesting and surprising. Uh-huh. Even for fans, you know, it's hard to surprise, you know, viewers with a new take on a story which is as widely known as Interview with the Vampire, where the book came out in the 80s. It was a cult hit. And then the movie, like, I'm old, so I remember this movie. And it was a massive hit when it came out, of the type that, like, you could, you know, as a younger person, you enjoyed it, but you could also watch it with older people. Like my stepmom loves Interview with the Vampire, the movie, and has read the Anne Rice book since seeing the movie. And she's not really like a genre fiction, you know, buff. Sure. It's not really her thing, but like, that is how widespread, you know, the influence of that movie was. So, yeah, I'm happy for Interview with the Vampire that it's doing so well. I'm sad that it's on AMC Plus, because that is like the entire reason I have not watched it, is that I don't want want to subscribe to another streaming service. And I see you know, I think Julie said it in the chat that she's in that same boat.
Yeah. But
apparently,
I'll say to both of you, just I have two comments I want to address.
Yeah, yeah.
A, it's coming to Netflix. The first is coming to Netflix, so you don't need
That's
to get AMC Plus, at least for a while. So, yeah, I get it. This can't possibly last. The reason I talk so much about it is because I feel like it's not being watched enough. I shouldn't worry, I guess, if they already renewed it, but still, I want to be able to try to amplify it. So maybe that'll make the difference. So it's coming to Netflix. So just to set on that, you don't think it's AMC Plus. The other thing is somebody said they fell off season two. I will say the first half of season two was kind of slow to set things up. The second half has been banger after banger after banger. So if you fell off season two, I say stick with it because I think it is earnestly worth the slightly less exciting first half to get to the barn burning second half.
Yeah, I mean, even without having seen the show, I will say if you watched the first season and you liked it and you started season two, like you got to come back to it because
you don't have to do anything.
There are some really, you have to. This is not an optional. This is television. It's serious business. But like knowing the story, like there are some really insane things that happen. Now I know near the end of season two. So yeah, get back on that train and I will watch it when it comes to Netflix and probably get AMC for, you know, you can do, I was informed today by our coworker, Natalie, that you can do a 7-day free trial of AMC Plus. So you could do that and binge the entire series. So I'm excited to check it out at some point. I agree with you. I think more people should be talking about it, especially now that we know it is getting a third season to do the book, the Vampire Lestat, which is essentially, I'm going to spoil this a little bit because whatever, these books have been out forever. So the Vampire Lestat is Lestat being upset with how he was portrayed in Interview with the Vampire. So he starts a rock band and goes on tour to set the record straight. And that's just such a ridiculously fun setup. They made a movie of this also in, I think, the 90s, might have been early 2000s. The movie was Queen of the Damned, but it combined the Vampire Lestat and the following book, The Queen of the Damned. It was very famous because Aaliyah played the Queen of the Damned, that character, and she died during production. Well, it was famous for the fact that Aaliyah died while they were filming it. So they had to CG. They did like some revolutionary CGI at the time. Yeah, she died before they could do her final scenes. So they had to do a lot of like digital effects work to kind of fill her into those scenes. So like the behind the scenes is really fascinating. It also has a banger of a soundtrack. Jonathan Davis from Korn was the voice of Lestat when he was singing. Yeah, I'm very excited to see what they do with that in the television show because it seems like the show has just done such a good job so far.
Korn, that doesn't date the movie.
It does a little bit.
Is there anything else that you're watching or reading, Dan, you want to sound off on before we wrap things up?
Yeah, I've got a couple of things. I'm still reading Mirror in Heaven, which is the Mesoamerican inspired fantasy series by Rebecca Roanhorse. That's the third book. I'm loving that series. I'm taking my time with it because I don't want it to end. Aside from that, I will be watching The Bear when it drops this week because I really enjoyed the first two seasons. I know you hold a Chicagoan grudge for how it has portrayed your city, but it also just has really good writing and excellent performances. So I will be watching it. Aside from that, there are two other big ones. The Acolyte, I need to at least mention. Been watching The Acolyte.
I watched it.
I thought this last episode was probably one of the best episodes the show has had so far. It was fight scene. Paid rapt attention for a lot of it, even though like the twist was pretty obvious of who the Sith Lord was. I thought,
I can't believe like, they even sold that as a twist.
You know, they're in this forest. It's like there was literally one other dude in the forest with them. Like there are only so many people it could have been.
But they didn't even try to give us like a MacGuffin or something, or like one other option.
Which, to be fair, I read an interview today. There's a really great EW cover story on this episode of The Acolyte. And the showrunner, Leslie Headland, basically said, I expected people to figure it out. Like, so for her, it wasn't, how can I keep you guessing who the Sith Lord was? It was, once I reveal it to you, the audience and the characters, I'm going to go hard on it as brutally as possible. And they did. I was shocked at the body counts of this episode of The Acolyte.
Yeah, me too.
I will say, I'm enjoying Amanda Stenberg as the twin characters, but I do think the writing for them is not very good. So I did notice that, like, I paid a lot of attention to the episode, and then once the action ended and it focused on the twin drama, I started to tune out a little bit, because it just, something about it isn't quite landing for me. Even though I like a lot of things about her performance, the show's just not selling it quite as well as, like, the Sith Lord, that reveal, and Manny Jacinto, the actor who plays them, I thought they is doing a really good job.
Sure.
So yeah, The Acolyte, I'm slightly more interested in than I was last week, but I could still fall off it at any point and I wouldn't lose sleep. Have you been watching it?
Yeah, I have. I've been watching. It's like a half hour each, so easy to watch. I think you hit it on the head that a full action scene does give the show some energy. But yeah, when the characters actually start talking, you kind of realize they're a little thinly written. I mean, the whole show was sold as like this one twin turn to the dark side. She's ready to like just cast off the dark side at a moment last episode and just like, I'm done with this. I'm going back. And now she's bad again. Yeah, there's just something missing. But lightsabers are fun to watch fly around.
I agree. Yeah, I thought the lightsaber work in this episode was probably some of the best in any of the Disney Plus shows. Because they've had some real hit and miss, like, lightsaber stuff. Like, some of it looks amazing. Some of it really just isn't up to the standard you would hope for lightsaber duels. I thought this episode went hard. I gasped. I went, holy shit. Like multiple times throughout the episode, because they did some really crazy stuff. Holy pantaloons, whatever. I don't know.
It went harder than you'd expect Star Wars to go. Still no blood. Would you agree with me now that it's not made for literal kids with neck snaps?
I would have enjoyed it as a child, because I liked Star Wars and didn't really have censorship of what I watched in my household. But yes, I think you're right. I think this was the episode where it was like, oh, you all think this could be a kid's show? It's not. Fair. The neck snap was pretty brutal. Not made for kids, even though it at times feels like it.
It's made for teens and the teens inside all of us, including kids.
Yes, exactly. There's one other thing I want to mention before we hit the lightning round. One other piece of media I have been consuming that is House of the Dragon adjacent. So I need to mention it. I've been playing a new video game recently called Tales of Kenzera Zao. It's a side scroller. It is with African myth, kind of like a mix between Black Panther stylistically with the play style of like a Mega Man game. And the studio that made this was it's Surgent Studios. It was founded by Abubakar Salim, the guy who plays Alan of Hull in House of the Dragon. He's also very, you know, well known in the video game world because he voiced Bayek of Siwa in Assassin's Creed Origins. So he started his own studio. He made this game it's about this person going through grief because they lost their father, and basically has this really, really, really deep story about that uses myth to kind of explore what that looks like for a person and the different ways that we go through grief and stuff like that. Really, really excellent. It also has, and I did not know this, Solemn actually tweeted about this. Steve Toussaint, who plays Corlys Velaryon, is one of the voices in this game. And so is Solemn. So both of them play characters in this game. And that is because, so they met on House of the Dragon, and Abubakar Salim convince Steve Toussaint to come do a voice in the game. I just thought that cool. was super cool. It's a very enjoyable game. If you're looking for something light, you can finish in maybe like 10-ish, 12 hours and kind of it light to play, but heavy emotionally. Nice. Really, really fun game. So I just wanted to shout that out.
I like that Abubakar Salim is one of those guys who like tweets every couple of minutes. Cause he's like, so he's one of those guys who's like, I'm going to build my brand. I am going to sell
yes.
myself on social media and I am not going to stop. I appreciate the hustle. And yeah. Julie mentioned that she's rereading the Duncan Egg novellas. I have, and I just have a Kindle. I'm going to start reading that soon, but I'm busy. So give me a second.
Wait. Claudia says there she's watching The Serpent Queen. Is that the one with Charles Dance? I saw a picture. I'm looking it up right now. I don't know if this is the one with Charles Dance. If it's
the
not,
Life of Catherine
then I'm
de Medici.
Just, it is the one with Charles Dance.
Yes,
yeah.
It is.
So I saw
as the Pope.
I saw an ad for this. I thought it was a meme and couldn't possibly be a real thing because it was just Charles Dance as the Pope. Is it any good, Claudia? Let us know in the chat. Yeah. But yeah, that's what I've been getting into lately. Do you have anything
cool.
else that you've been enjoying you want to talk about?
The Acolyte. I'm still playing Animal Well on the Switch, but I'm just busy. I'm so busy.
Ooh, fun.
And someone yeah. asked how we get the Interview with Vampire Screeners early, because when you're a journalist, I put it in quotes, sometimes they
Why
give
you putting
you
that in quotes, Dan?
Them.
You are, Dan.
Because, I don't know, blogger. I don't know if we can call ourselves journalists exactly. We're more like bloggers. It's like a journalist little brother who has no legs. That's what we are. So let's move on to the lightning round, where we go through a bunch of stories we didn't have time to get to in the main body of the show and give you our rapid fire 20-second thoughts.
Sounds
hey, Daniel,
good.
If you had to guess,
would
you guess that I put these in order or that I haven't?
I'm going to guess that you haven't, but
that's great.
I should ask you first.
Okay,
is what the order feels like to me looking at it.
Let's do it.
So check out this picture, everyone. And sorry, audio listeners, check it out with your mind. It's David Kurenzwit as Superman and Rachel Brosnahan as Lois Lane.
On the set of James Gunn's new film, Superman. Yeah, I mean, they're making a Superman movie. They're always going to get a new guy, Superman. Rachel Brosnahan from Mrs. Maisel as Lois Lane. That I like a lot. David Kurenzwit, I don't really know that well. His suit is kind of a little ill-fitting, but I imagine they're going to like, it's, you know, it's a post-production kind of thing where they'll muscle it up in the editing bay. That could be fun coming out next year, I think. Daniel, yeah. this is a pretty big one. HBO, possibly Max, they seem to be blending more and more these days, has ordered straight to series an 8-episode season of a Green Lantern show, speaking of DC, called Lanterns.
Yeah, and I think this is helmed by Damon Lindelof from Lost. And so this is part of HBO's new shift where they are they're not doing Max originals as much. They're airing them on HBO. And this seems like a pretty cool expansion of their DC universe. I will watch a Damon Lindelof show any day of the week.
Sure.
So I can't wait to see what he does with this. Could be really cool.
HBO is going to get weird. Okay, hit me.
Yes, one can only hope. Okay, so Josh Gad, I don't know who that is, by the way.
What?
Josh Gad is making... I'm sorry, Maybe. Josh Gad. I don't know who you are.
He's the snowman from
Westeros.
Frozen.
Oh,
Olaf.
Okay. Olaf from Frozen is... That makes this way more fun, actually. Olaf from Frozen is making a Spaceballs sequel with Mel Brooks attached to produce.
Okay, Josh Gad, I mean, I feel whatever about Spaceballs. Let me tell you, when I'm a kid, I have this VHS tape of Spaceballs. I put that in when I'm like 9. I laugh my ass off. I quote that movie to this day. I won't do it here because most of the quotes are pretty profane. Your Schwartz is as big as mine. Love this movie when I was a kid. I still love it. A sequel, I'd probably watch it. Josh Gad, I'm like, I don't know, maybe, but I love that movie a lot. Star Wars,
a
parody comedy, Mel Brooks. Hey, Daniel,
yeah,
they're making
movie.
The Witcher season 4. Here's movie icon Lawrence Fishburne, Morpheus in The Matrix, Bobby in What's That Got to Do with It as the vampire Regis.
Yeah, I guess we're giving away the spoiler here that he is a vampire. This is one of those things like that egg is a Targaryen in Duncan Egg, where it's just so widely known it's hard to really keep it as a spoiler. I don't know what's going on with this wig. I hope this was a test wig. I love Lawrence Fishburne. I don't know how I feel about him as Regis, but I'm excited to see what he does with it. But oof, that wig. Someone stop committing crimes against Lawrence Fishburne's head. Okay. Oh, here we go. We were just talking about The Acolyte.
We should have brought
apparently,
them up,
yeah. Haters of The Acolyte are being so hateful toward it that they're accidentally review bombing the wrong thing, the 2008 thriller Acolytes, which is not a Star Wars thing.
Yeah, not at all related. I mean, sometimes the internet chooses a show or a movie to just be the avatar of everything they loathe about whatever they hate that month. Like, I don't think The Acolyte's that great a show, that good a show, but it's become a lightning rod, or at least it was, kind of dying now. And they call and they review bombed Acolytes, a 28th trailer has nothing to do with it, which is just kind of funny. Daniel.
Yes.
Okay, I'm gonna hit you up. I don't know if you're
into
this.
You can shuffle stuff around if you want.
I'm not gonna.
You want to ask me about Mark Mylod? I'm fine with that.
Okay.
If you want to talk about that one.
Sure. Daniel, Francesca Gardner and Mark Mylod, who together have worked on such shows as Succession, Game of Thrones, His Dark Materials, others, are going to be the main producers and directors on HBO's or Max's, whatever, Harry Potter TV show.
I strongly dislike it.
Do you dislike them or just the whole thing?
The whole thing. I love Mark Mylod. I'm not quite as familiar with Francesca Gardner, but I think, you know, I used to work in a bookstore. I've been watching the Harry Potter cash grab be shamelessly awful for like the past like decade and a half. There's no way that was 20 seconds, Richard. I hate this on premise. I wish Mark Mylod had better things to do than Harry Potter.
All right, Daniel, hater, gonna go review bomb a pot store. Okay, hit me.
Yeah, if there's one thing I hate, it is the J.K. Rowling crash cash grab eternal that is Harry Potter merchant remakes. Apparently I have strong opinions. I didn't know till we got talking about it. That's a lie I knew. Okay, so here's the one I thought you might want to talk about. So Robert Eggers, his movie Nosferatu is coming out on Christmas Day. Merry Christmas.
I do love that on Christmas Day. Like, I think it happens sometimes. They do like a horror movie on Christmas Day, like counter program. Robert Eggers, really cool, kind of like modern auteur. There aren't a lot of those. Like The Lighthouse, The Witch, The Northman, really distinctive filmmaker, remaking Nosferatu, a 1922 silent film that's been remade a couple of times. It's almost like the new, it's like Little Women, but for horror movies. I like Nosferatu. I love Robert Eggers. I would like to see it, please. Okay. And finally, Daniel.
Yes.
George R.R. Martin wrote on his not a blog that the next Game of Thrones prequel, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, is going to come out in early 2025, I quotes it, but he amended it to just say just 2025. What do you think happened?
I think that's funny. I don't know if this was widely said or you just caught this. I think that's hilarious. Okay. So yeah, he had written on his not a blog coming in early 2025, and I guess someone at HBO maybe called him and said, hey, please don't make it so people will be mad at us when it comes out in June or whatever. So he took out the early. So Duncan Egg coming sometime in 2025.
All right. Sweet. Another spinoff, Fantasy Fan says. Sounds like a question Indeed. For another day. Do we need it? We talk about it, but we're out of time. Thanks for watching, everybody. We are here every Wednesday live on the Winter's Coming Facebook and YouTube channel. Also, again, we're doing live recap, reviews, impressions of every episode of House of the Dragon immediately after they air on Sunday evenings. And even beyond that, we have a TikTok, call it a WikTok, it just makes the most sense. We have our YouTube shorts where you can see us in little digestible bits. We're available in podcast form wherever podcasts are available, be it Google Play, YouTube Music, or elsewhere. Give us a like, give us a subscribe, toss money at your screen. Maybe we'll get it. And we just really appreciate you continuing to watch us, talk to us. We had a lot of fun today. Thanks for all your comments. You guys are always a blast. We will see you Sunday, Wednesday, or someday. Goodbye, everybody, and good luck.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.